All right, the end of the unicorn era. This is going to be the depressing panel. Unicorn apocalypse, it's not what we want to see, but here we are. Do you even think that premise is correct? Is it the end of the unicorn era? Jay, you want to take that?
I'll start. My definition of a unicorn is very different than the definition of what people think of a unicorn in valuation. So for me, a unicorn is a software, or actually any company, that gets to $1 billion in revenue or ARR. And for me, because that is tangible, that is something that you can look at, they actually have a product or a service that they're selling, and people are paying them, or an enterprise are paying them $1 billion a year. The valuation is all over the place, and so for me, I think there will be other companies that are going to be valued a lot over $1 billion, and it's still happening. So from a valuation perspective, I don't think the unicorn era is over.
Christina?
No, I think, as a founder on the panel, need to be and am very much an optimist about technology. And so I very much think there are businesses that have been started, there will be businesses that are started that will grow to, $1 billion in valuation, $1 billion in revenue, and that is just a long-term trend that's not gonna change at all. I think the thing that will be different probably is kind of what revenue is necessary to achieve that valuation, right? And as that revenue level goes up, there will be fewer companies with $1 billion valuation deemed unicorns, but I don't think the concept overall is over by any sense.
Sure. Now we've gone through a pretty crazy cycle though, right? I mean, 2021, 22, early 22 at least.
Yeah.
There was more unicorns born than ever before. Now these companies are often looking at down rounds. Mm-hmm. Jay, what went wrong?
Well, lots of things went wrong, right? And it's always easy to say that in hindsight, right? When things were going on, we now know that the interest rates were low, which kind of points you to your cost of capital being zero or close to zero, which means that when you do the long-term DCF or cash flow models, you kind of come to a point where you think that you can exit a company at 20x, 20 times revenue multiple or ARR multiple or 30 times ARR multiple. So all the models kind of predicted that if the interest rates kept low, you would get these kind of valuations and you would have companies that are valued at 40, 50, 60 billion, even with like $1 billion in revenue. And I think that's what kind of changed. And I think the other thing was, there was a lot of supply and demand of supply of capital. Lots of funds had raised a lot of money and they needed to deploy it. And that was partly, again, driven by interest rates and they had to deploy it in companies. And, valuation is an auction process.
Sure. Let me challenge you a little bit on that. Shouldn't you as VCs have seen this? Because you've been through these cycles before and we've had hype cycles like this.
In hindsight, we should have. We didn't. Like, to be fair, we actually tried to be more reserved and did a fewer deals than a lot of our competitors. But we were as bad as anybody else in terms of not realizing that this will come to an end.
Sure, sure. And Christina, you raised at the beginning of this hype cycle. You raised, as the downturn started as well. Can you talk a little bit what that experience was like and what that felt like from the entrepreneur's perspective?
Yeah, absolutely. So for some context, we raised Vantus Series A in basically January, February of 21, which is very much the beginning of the cycle, but I don't think we really realized it at that time. That was right, kind of first winter of COVID, vaccines weren't out, everyone was in fact just kind of sitting at home bored, and just wanted to talk and make new friends over slide decks on Zoom.
And get SOC 2 certification.
And get SOC 2 certification, which we'd love to help folks with. But more seriously, that fundraising process was almost totally over Zoom. I think it put a lot of power, that dynamic put a lot of power with the entrepreneur, because you could very credibly say, hey, I'm talking to firms, this week and gonna have a data room next week and would like, offers by this date and I'll make a decision by this date. And you didn't have to schedule Right, with someone. You didn't have to figure out when you could drive down to Sand Hill. You didn't have to be like, oh, should I get on a plane to New York and meet New York investors in person? You were just sitting on Zoom back to back. And VCs were too, but they knew that. Yeah. And so they like, it did just make more of, I think, a bidding market. You know, again, you sort of realize it's happening at the time, but in retrospect, I think there was a lot of that that I saw in January, February, and then it just, you know, super continued through 2021 to the, like, you know, term sheet, sober text message, yes, like, no meeting, just go stuff. And then we raised our Series B almost a year ago. It was May 2022, announced early June 22. And then, so taking y'all back a year ago, like, the ice was melting, right? And you're like, the public markets had falling and were falling, and like, all the interest rate talk was going on. And it did feel like almost, like literally in the almost every day we're having conversations, the environment was just getting worse and worse. And it was so different. And there was so much skepticism of like, well, you know, you've surpassed your revenue projections and now you're at this new revenue milestone and, you know, good for you, Vanta, but how much should you burn? How much of the cost? What does retention look like? Like, I, you know, good job on your revenue growth, but here's my seven other questions I want to ask you. And just totally different dynamic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was talking to an entrepreneur earlier this morning, and he was, everything has changed. He's trying to raise right now. And investors are ghosting him.
Yeah.
LPs don't want the funds to invest at all because they're worried.
Yeah.
Is that kind of, you know, you're not raising right now, but is that what you're seeing? And Jay, are you ghosting a lot of
I look, I try not to ghost people. And, you know, we have this whole thing where associates will go back if we are not going to take her around. But to be fair, like, you know, entrepreneurs ghosted VCs during the hype in 2021. But look, it is part of the cycle, right? There's always more scrutiny when things are not working out, but when capital is not free. But overall, I think it makes you a better company, right? A better CEO when somebody kind of comes in and pokes around. Because when you're in a public market, remember, you're going to have the same kind of scrutiny, if not more, when you go public. So having that experience and building your team that they are able to provide all these answers and run a business that is efficient, I think is good for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Sure. How has that changed for you right now, running a unicorn?
Yeah, I think, I actually much prefer this, like the 2023 and sometimes the 22 environment to like 2021. I think 2021 to me, when I look back, it was a lot of FOMO. It was a lot of like, you got to make a decision fast. You know, candidates, exec candidates were on the market for all of 14 seconds. And so if you didn't, you know, meet them and decide you wanted to hire them and then hire them in 12 seconds, like all bets were off. And I think everyone made a lot of decisions that were not very well considered because, like, kind of how can you in that time frame? On the company side, on the exec side, like, on the folks who work company
and the investment side.
You know, it's just, like, it's a little, like, how can you do this so well so quickly? And so now, in some ways, things are, you know, tougher and slower, but I think it really does let, you know, us, when we're hiring, have a real conversation with candidates and try to say, look, here's Vanta, you know, here's why we're excited. Here's the things we're working on. Is this truly a place you want to be? And everywhere has its faults, you know, or are faults things you think you can tolerate, or are they not your cup of tea, which is totally fair. But again, being able to have those conversations up front, so you're not having them on your, you know, second week on the job, which just feels gross to kind of everyone.
Jay, what advice are you giving your unicorns right now?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, I think I always tell my CEOs that, look, the valuation is doesn't matter of what you got right now. It's really when you exit, that's the only valuation that really matters. And even, you know, the IPO is not an exit, you know, maybe even further than that, right? So that's one. And I also tell them to look at dilution, right? If you're an entrepreneur, what valuation you raise your money doesn't matter as much as how much you own of the company when you do have an exit. Because there are some people who raise money lots of times, but at a high valuation, but you look at their ownership, they own, as a founder, only 4% of the company. So that is why being dilution sensitive is a lot better. And then look, we have been like with every other investor, we have the mantra of being efficient. So it's like a broken record. Our firm has always been focused on being efficient. I think we lost, just like everybody, a little bit. So we are telling them, but you know, as I was saying before, it is a hard thing to tell people as an board member, an investor. You go and say, oh, you got a cut. But these are real people that they are asking the CEO and the management team to cut. They probably have relationships, you know, maybe they worked with each other prior to them. They might have pulled them off from a well-paying job in a stable company. So you kind of have to be cognizant that, you know, just by saying, hey, be more efficient, be more, you know, cut cost is not always an easy thing. And you kind of have to work with the CEOs to get them to a point where all of these personal and, you know, kind of human issues are also taken care of.
Yeah, Christina, you had to lay off some people, right? I said it was going to be a depressing panel, but it's that can't have been easy.
No, not for anyone. I mean, least of all me, right? Like, it's not, you know, at all that. I think the way we thought about it was sort of in two pieces. First, what is the business decision and what is the decision for the business? And that was where we got to, like, okay, we should do a RIF. And then it was like, okay, well, great. Now we have real humans, like, who we've brought on and, you know, haven't, like, it is not their fault. It is ours. It is mine. And so given that, how do we take care of them as best we can and, like, give them as much grace and dignity through this as we can, you know, given the business decision? And so that's very much how we structured our process there.
Yeah. But yeah. Look, we also have this thing when some of our portfolio companies are laying off people, we try to find roles for the people who are being let go within our portfolio company. So we have our talent team has a way to kind of work with the people getting laid off and try to find them jobs in everywhere else. And I think that's what people respect, right? When you let go of people, if you treat them properly, if you try to provide an exit pad and maybe path where they can find another job, you know, it works out okay.
Sure. Now, a lot of those people probably found jobs and, you know, we've got another hype cycle right now in some of these AI firms that are out there right now. How do you make sure that we're not repeating the last cycle now with these AI firms that have crazy valuations, are raising billions of dollars with barely a product or maybe only exist for 2 weeks?
I'll go out on a limb and say it is a hype cycle. We are making the same mistakes that we have done before. And look, in every hype cycle, great companies come out of it. And there will be great companies will come out of this hype cycle also. And there's always going to be, like, you know, generative AI is here to stay for the next 20, 30 years. And for most likely, the really great companies are going to be formed not at this hype cycle, but at the tail end when the hype cycle dies and when real businesses get created.
But how do you feel about this AI cycle? Because you're probably trying to build in some of these tools.
Yeah, right? So I think I'm trying to hold two things in my head. One, I do believe in the transformative power of technology generally, of machine learning and advanced language models and AI. I think that, you know, the moniker AI company is going to sound, whereas right now it sounds like cool and you get your TechCrunch headline and your like $1 billion valuation pre-product. It will start to sound like tinny to our ears, the way like a mobile company or a cloud company is like, yes and, like no kidding. Right, but that almost speaks to like how powerful the technology is, how ubiquitous it is, how much of a sea change it will be. But I think it's, you know, again, it's so much that it is just going to be in the fabric of every company. And so we were joking earlier, but like, you know, would a note-taking app, would, I don't know, if somebody was trying to fund a note-taking app, like low single-digit millions in valuation, would an AI note-taking app warrant a, you know, billion-dollar valuation? Like, no, that also sounds silly. And I think that some of what's happening right now is like the equivalence of sort of AI note-taking apps are getting, you know, valued much more than note-taking apps, and these two things will, in fact, converge.
Yeah, you remember when we talked about Instagrams, like $1 billion, and now all these companies are raising that much.
That was a great buy, though, on Facebook's part.
Yeah. Worked out pretty well. Now they're probably adding. I mean, they're adding AI too. Jay, does the industry just never learn? Is that why we keep going? Because, I mean, you invested in crypto. I'm beating up on you here a little bit.
Yeah.
But you invested in some crypto firms as well.
Yeah. No, look, you know, the AI. Like, I think people. learn and they don't learn, right? Because there is a lot of FOMO again going on in this space, which is like, you know, there's from an investor perspective, there's pressure from LPs like, hey, what generative AI company have you invested in? And there's also a little bit of, you know, like if you don't do any generative AI companies, especially if you're an early stage investor, you might not be able to have a look at the next one that really is game changing, right? So there is a little bit of this, not really FOMO, but the fact that you have invested in one that might not eventually be successful might lead you to get to a company that might be a huge, you know, decacon or, you know, whatever, gets to $1 billion revenue really quickly. So there's a, and to some extent, right, look, the other thing that people forget is a lot of times, even if the valuation is $1 billion and you don't exit at, say, $1 billion, but you only raise a little bit of money, actually the investors and everybody makes out quite well, right? So the math might also work out, even though people have raised it at a large valuation.
Yeah. It's looking beyond this hype cycle, on a positive note, like if you look beyond AI, do you see other areas right now that are underserved where the next generation of unicorns could come from?
Gosh, I think running a SaaS company is this, and the tools within a SaaS company opportunities, it is partially like how many, you know, SaaS vendors do we, like, I think Advanta, the number is potentially three digits, right? There are so many tools, and yet so many of them do not work well together. The sales and marketing stack is one in particular. I don't know what the like answer to that is, but it does feel like there's something of a consolidation coming, whether it's of existing tools or of folks who start, I don't know, and building, you know, the sales stack from the ground up and just have everything integrated, rather than you're trying to integrate an outbound emailer with a lead scoring tool, with a lead routing tool, with your CRM, with, I don't know, four other things there. But just, you know, kind of day in and day out, you know, I very much breathe the like somewhat minute operations of Vanta. It's wild. Does not feel like the technology industry in 2023 should, or I thought it would.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, like, we invest in enterprise software, right? And in some ways, we have an easier job than maybe in any other field.
Sure.
Because, you know, the same kind of problem gets solved and has to be solved when things change, the platform changes. You had CA and BMC. Then you had Datadog. Now you have Grafana and, you know, Chronosphere. There's going to be another version of that, right? So for us, and each of them actually solve larger and larger problems and get higher valuation. So for us, it's always like, you know, what you're doing, there's going to be like after 5-7 years, somebody doing it a little bit differently, and you invest in that, right? And that's kind of how we look at it.
Yeah, they create larger and larger products, ecosystems that then need to be integrated.
That's right. Like it keeps a whole cycle
keeps going. Vicious cycle of enterprise
it's
companies.
It's kind of the gym.
Yeah. Virtuous cycle.
Yeah, depends on if you're the integrator or not.
That's right.
Absolutely. Well, thank you both very much. I'm glad we ended on a positive note here.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.